Hi and welcome to Funded by Plus Impact. My name is Constance.
And I'm Rasmus, and together we'll be co-hosting this podcast.
Plus Impact is a free digital platform supporting Nordic impact startups throughout their funding journey.
The purpose of this podcast will be to bring transparency to the funding process by sharing funding stories and insights from the impact space. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on our first ever episode of Funded by Plus Impact. A very warm welcome to Jess Fleischer, CEO of Son of a Tailor. Thank you so much for wanting to sit down with us today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
It's definitely a pleasure hosting you. Yes. And Jess, of course, you're here because you launched your company, Son of a Tailor, back in 2014.
Right.
Through a successful crowdfunding campaign.
Yes.
And since then, you've raised over 60 million. Mm-hmm. Danish crowns in funding, most recently was Series A round. And on top of that, you've basically just proven that it's possible to create a sustainable, also a scalable way of producing clothing, which is pretty impressive. So just in short, Jess, can you basically just take us back? Like, how did Son of a Tailor come about, and what was the main issue you were trying to address?
So I think the main issue was that I came outside the fashion industry and I had two issues. So I had a personal issue finding t-shirts that fit, which I felt was very weird as I saw myself as a pretty regular sized guy.
Yeah.
And the other issue was that I used most of my career in the manufacturing industry, being a consultant, implementing the Toyota production system across sectors, so not only in the car industry, but really across sectors. All it's also known as lean manufacturing, right?
Yeah.
And with that, when you come with that perspective, which is very much about reducing waste, limiting the size of inventories, making products customizable, producing them just in time, the fashion industry seemed to be like doing the exact opposite. It seemed to be in love with inventories. It seemed to do very little customization, especially compared to that it needed to be to people's real bodies, which are different. And there was also such a big, and there still is, sustainability waste problem in the industry. And nobody seems to approach it.
No,
and
it still exists, right?
It still exists and really care about it. And I felt that was such an intriguing and important challenge that somebody had to take it on. And then I guess it ended up being me and my co-founder, Andreas, who were not from the fashion industry.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, again, somebody had to look at this.
Yeah. All right. So did you pitch the idea together? Or was it you by yourself?
So it was me who came up with the idea, and I guess they pitched it to Andreas, who then became my co-founder, and he's kind of like, and was and still is, the kind of the creative side of what we do. I'm more to the business side of what we do, and then we took it on from there. So we launched it on Kickstarter, had what I today would call mediocre success because we expected a lot more sales. We got 300 customers, and that was amazing because relatively to Kickstarter at that time, it was okay. But yet again, we spent 6 months on getting 300 customers, and probably we could have done that in a smarter way. And later to investors and I guess customers and employees. You pitch all the time as a founder.
Sure.
You mentioned in our email exchange earlier that you nearly went bankrupt twice.
Yeah.
And we wanted to kickstart this conversation with this angle because it seems like this is probably something that a lot of other founders are coming or have to face. And can you just tell us a little bit more about what led you to that edge?
Yeah, so first of all, when I say it got founded in 2014, it's a bit of a lie. So because I kind of quit my job before that and kind of worked on the idea, worked a bit as a business consultant as well. So I had spent a bit of money setting it up of my own savings. So when Kickstarter didn't really perform financially, so with the 300 customers and £15,000 that we secured, it was definitely not going in break even. we had to kind of like seriously consider, okay, is there really not a market for this? So I actually, we were actually close to shutting it down at that time.
Yeah.
I actually got a job offer from a telecom operator, and I said, okay, I don't sign it if I secure investment from third party. And it happened that we got investment before that. So that was kind of the first close bankruptcy, or at least when you're a very small company, bankruptcy sounds a little bit more than it really is, but closure at least. And then we got funding from an incubator called Founders. And then 2 years later, we had a hard time getting traction and really built the market potential. I think we did a lot of good things in the back end. And that investor fairly enough said that, okay, you need to get funding from other places to kind of get like a testament to that somebody else also thinks this works when you're not having too good sales numbers. And that was really, really hard.
Yeah.
I probably also took a lot of wrong approaches finding investors, but it was indeed hard. And that kind of came down to the edge as well. So we were a 5-person team at that time, and we went 2 months without salary to secure investment. So in principle, we should have been going bankrupt 2 months earlier.
When you say you took some wrong approaches, what was some examples of that?
Yeah, sure. So I think okay, this is and I still think this is such a huge potential startup that we have going for us. And the place where the money is in the US. Most of the startups within our field who had done well, they were from New York. So why not take to New York and find great investors that would give higher valuations and who would know more about what we did, what we wanted to do. And I got to New York. I was also having a flu and was very sick the week I was there. That was not making things better.
No.
But these investors, they were very, very hard to get in touch with.
Yeah.
And secondly, those I did meet with, they were at the end of the day, they were looking at me. You're coming from Copenhagen and asking me in New York for like $500,000, maybe less. Why wouldn't you just take that from Copenhagen?
Yeah.
Why are you going here to New York to get that kind of money? So that didn't make any sense to them. And looking in hindsight, maybe they were right. At least I guess I spent too much time looking for relatively few money in the outer rim instead of in the closer network.
All right.
So that was definitely one mistake I think I did.
Yeah.
Another mistake I did was that, and I think that's my key takeaway, that is that you need to make fundraising a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
I put it very much on myself. And that is just hard because fundraising is the full pipeline. So it's finding leads.
Yeah.
It is kind of like finding out how do I get in contact with these leads? Mm-hmm. What kind of network do I have to get in contact with these leads and get me kind of like introduction to them? And then doing the pitching, right? And as anybody who has worked with pipelines, doing the full pipeline yourself is very demotivating and it's very hard. So when we had to speed up, when crisis really hit, I said, okay, we need to involve a couple of more people in this. So I made the rest of the team doing the top of the pipeline. So scrolling LinkedIn newspapers for potential leads and finding out how were we connected to these leads.
Yeah.
And then I did the pitching only.
All right.
That was a lot more effective, but it was also a lot more motivating because I could tell somebody else, okay, you need to fucking fill the pipeline so I have something to do. And they would then tell me, okay, we filled the pipeline, so you need to go secure the funding.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very tactical advice.
Definitely.
But I think a lot of founders, they overlook this. They think it's only on them.
Yeah.
And that's wrong.
Yeah, but I could also see just the benefit of specializing in that one task just to make sure that you get that done, right?
Yeah. And really see it as a pipeline that you need to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's a great takeaway.
Yeah,
it really is. Do you think that it ever was like a challenge or an obstacle that you were just as much an impact startup, you know, more SDG oriented? Was that something that you thought your potential investors might have found a bit not as lucrative?
Honestly, I always find it hard to pitch yourself as an impact startup.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, the investors, their primary goal is still to make money.
It's the profits.
And then the secondary goal is to maybe to cross off, okay, we did it in a sustainable way. So I think like, and I still think that's where you have to start. That is, how does this become a sustainable business? And then how does it become sustainable for the environment? It's a tough balance. I think there's probably a few startups who are able to flip it. Mm-hmm. That's mainly those startups who has a very, they are good at branding, they're good at marketing, and they're good at flipping the discussion.
Yeah.
And if you are that kind of people who worked in branding, then go down that route. Mm-hmm. But if you're not, probably pick the other route.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to kind of change yourself in that
so
way.
Is that how you might have designed your pitch as well? Saying that definitely the profit is the number one goal, and then the bonus is that we're doing it all in a sustainable way.
Yeah. So I'm not coming from the branding side of business.
No.
I'm more coming from the operation side. So it's much more natural for me to start the pitch in that way, and that's why I would advise myself to do it like that. But other people might find a different approach, especially nowadays as it's changing a little bit. And there are funds like Vækstfonden, where it's such a big target that to ensure sustainability, mm-hmm. that it might now even overrule the profitability measure. So things have also changed since 2014.
Which is also a super, super good thing.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, very definitely. Positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just going back to, you were talking about this pipeline that you built and you were pitching yourself. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose the investors that you chose to embark on your journey?
Yeah. So I think like, first of all, and this might sound very honest and a bit wrong, but in the beginning, I didn't choose the investors.
No.
They chose me.
Yeah.
So I didn't have the luxury of choosing investor. I had to choose those who believed in the idea, and in the first couple of rounds, that was only one investor in mm-hmm. the first round, and also on one investor in the second round.
Yeah.
Maybe two investors. You can argue two investors in the second round. So it was not. So that was it for me. So I didn't have a choice in the first rounds, and I think you need to be aware of that. There's more money in the market now, so I think startups have a more better way to actually make a choice. And they've also gotten smarter than I think I was at raising money. But it might be that you need to take what comes. And then my advice is basically the first thing that you need to check. And I think that I actually said no in the very early bankruptcy days. A risk of bankruptcy days, because I could see these people, I couldn't work with them. There were no chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I might even have thought there's a high asshole potential for these guys. and that is one thing that I don't regret.
Yeah.
And that is that I said no to those that I didn't believe in chemistry-wise.
Yeah.
Then I would rather go bankrupt. And I think that's the right approach.
It sounds at least that you're staying true to yourself and also like the mission of your whole company.
Yeah exactly. So I think like at the end of the day, like I just don't think you want to have investors on board who you believe have different values from yourself or like radically different values.
Yeah, you should work at least towards the same goal and not try to go
exactly.
different directions. Yeah. What do you think, looking at all the rounds that you've raised, like what has been maybe the hardest for you? Where was the biggest struggle?
I think like it is as always the first rounds,
right.
or at least maybe the second round. I mean, where the rounds in the beginning are hard, mm-hmm. Because you need to basically, again, the landscape might have changed a little bit, but at the end of the day, you probably need to go out finding angels to invest in you. And angels, to find those, is very, very network driven. Mm-hmm. And they're hard to find, because most angels, they actually don't brag about them having money or invest, and they might only invest in 3-4 companies, mm-hmm. Which is a little bit as opposed to the capital firms who will do marketing campaigns even to get their word out. So they're hard to find, and when you find them, because they get a ton of emails already, you would need to do it through your network, otherwise there's a high likelihood they won't respond to your emails. So I think that the earlier rounds are trickier.
Yeah.
And you also didn't have so much experience, right, in raising funds. It was your
very
first
true.
Time.
Very true. Very good point. You're also less experienced in how to do it. So that's also a disadvantage.
Besides realizing that, sometimes there is no chemistry between investors and you should probably listen to that mm-hmm. feeling, did you have any other realization when meeting investors?
I think like when you meet investors, I think, and especially angel investors, they're very different. And I mean, they are real people, and real people are different, and you need to kind of approach them differently. And you'll probably have a pitch deck in your back. I always say that the best presentation is the one that stays in your back. Mm-hmm. I didn't come up with that myself, but that is very true, because then you can alter the discussion to what you feel they want to hear, right? Of course, you still need to be true to yourself, but maybe sometimes you bring up, when then you can say, okay, I need to bring up impact or sustainability on page one, on your metaphorically page one, or I actually need to put profit on page one, or whatever it is. And that, I think, that is one important thing, that when you meet these, at least at the first time, most of the time they are not interested in seeing a presentation at the first meeting. Mm. So they are just interested in getting to know you. So I think be very much aware of that. Be you and kind of feel how it goes.
Yeah.
And the better your presentation is in your back, the better you'll actually be able to pull that off. Mm. So it's not that you shouldn't do a presentation.
No.
You should just stay in the back.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I at least know that you were following some sort of structured fundraising process.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, what key resources do you think are necessary, at least to set yourself up for fundraising success?
I think I have a background where I have done PowerPoints quite a lot before. Yeah. So I think if you don't have that background, you probably might want to run it through somebody who has, and most likely you have somebody in your network mm-hmm. who has looked at presentations before and who knows what should be in it and what should be covered.
Yeah.
And I know there's also a lot of great courses in that, and probably in this environment where we sit as well. Mm-hmm. So I think I think that is definitely one thing that you need to prepare yourself on. And then I think the other thing is that start early. I think mm-hmm. don't look for money when you need money, but you need to look for money way before that. And that's a lot easier said than done, because in the beginning you have a lot of other things you need mm-hmm. to cover in terms of product and marketing. And so the last thing you have time for is fundraising. But at least that's what I've learned. That is that I'm always in fundraising mode. Also when I know that we're not taking in money, but I'm always trying to keep new investors pretty close.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that I've learned the hard way.
Now that you've completed your Series A, would you say that it gets easier and easier the more you also get investors on board and you benefit in some way from their network?
So I think the initial part of finding investors is getting a lot easier. So finding them, getting in contact with them. So I have no problem today at getting coffee meetings with the people I want to get coffee meetings with. And maybe they might even contact me before I contact them. So that's a lot easier. What is harder is then when you need to seal the deal, because you are doing it on a lot more money. So they are asking a lot more questions. They're pulling in lawyers, they're putting in accountants, and they're putting in HR people and all these kind of things. So that makes it trickier. And that is something I've needed to learn along the way, what that process actually means and how you set yourself up for that process. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
When you say that they pull all these resources, do you have what it takes to basically answer back, or are you missing some things still?
I think we have been smart and lucky and having great advisors already who could help us a whole lot. Our current investors could help us. It turned out that we had great lawyers and accountants who had been through this process, so they advised us really, really well, and that helped us. So I think I don't think anybody likes to pay for lawyers, but you also need to accept at a point of time that you probably need to do it, and it is kind of like waste money, but it's still money well spent in a way.
Yeah.
So it's just one of the costs of running a startup that I think you need to have. You need to accept at one point of time. Yeah,
probably good for the future to also nail that part.
Yeah.
Surprises in the future. I think you kind of talked about this a little bit, what your previous skills or how your previous skills enabled you to secure funding, mm-hmm. and it was really your PowerPoint skills, for example, or your understanding of operations. Do you feel like you had another superpower throughout your funding journey?
I think I had resilience or stamina, whatever you call it. I've learned, maybe always known about myself, that I never give up. And I think that's really the mindset that you need to put it into it in startup in general, but definitely in when you have a hard time raising money, that you don't give up. And luckily I had a team who also didn't give up. I mean, mm-hmm. they went without salary for 2 months, which was quite impressive. So I think that's the mindset that you need to have, and that's a superpower, that this is going to be hard, and I don't give up. I don't quit along the way. Yeah,
it's amazing how, at least I can understand for your culture at least, that it has actually been a true effort, like all the way through. Mm-hmm. It sounds like your values have really resonated through your staff and also your co-founders as well. So that's definitely a force, I feel. If you could give one practical advice for first timers in fundraising, especially within the impact space, what would be the most useful?
I don't know if there's a special advice within impact, but I would say that don't feel shy of taking easy money if you see it. So if there's somebody in your near network, you have a rich uncle or whatever, then don't make life harder, too hard for yourself, and believe that you need to have this New York angel who has superpowers within this area. Because what you probably will find out, that this New York angel, he doesn't have that many superpowers as you thought he had. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's one advice. If you have in the early days somebody who says, I want to invest in you because I believe in you and we have a good chemistry, then seriously consider it, because that would make your life easier, because then you can move faster on towards building your product, building your customer base, or whatever you need to build.
Yeah. Amazing. That's great advice, definitely. Yeah. Yes. If you at least could go back in time, I think we have time for this question. What would you have done differently in your funding journey? Is there any moment in time that really sticks out to you as?
Yeah, so I think I covered it, right? So making it a team effort, start early,
yeah,
and also start maybe if you know eventually I need money, but there's be a long time, mm-hmm. and think about how does this kind of tie up to become something people will invest in. And I think that's especially important in the impact sector, because in the impact sector you can be a little bit tunnel visioned, that the only thing that matters is to reduce CO2 emissions or whatever kind of is your goal, and then you forget a little bit about the economical sustainable parameter of your business, which I still think most investors care more about. So I think those are some of the key takeaways. So team, start early, don't give up.
Yes,
that's perfect advice.
It seems like it also has to do with your personality and how much you believe in your own project.
I feel that too.
Yeah, I
guess it does, of course. So, of course, and that is also something I guess investors they indeed are looking for. So how much does this guy, this poor guy, wants to bleed for his project? Okay, so he had a whole team that went without salary for 2 months. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So if they believe in you.
Yeah. So at least they believe in the idea themselves. So why shouldn't I give them 1 or 2 million Danish?
Maybe to wrap it up, do you have something to say more about Son of a Tailor? Like, where are you right now? How much are you, or how well are you doing with sales and everything?
So I think we are in an amazing position at the moment. I think for me, startup has only become more and more fun over time. And that's also something to keep in mind when you have the first hard years. So we are still doubling our growth and seeing amazing kind of like feedback from our customers and loyalty among our customers, and we are now able to build on all the layers, especially into our communications, what we originally thought the business would be about sustainability and transparency and zero waste and all these kind of things. So and we just closed the Series A as you said. So that's really interesting. Right now it's really, really fun. Very soon the investors they would come back to with high expectations.
Yeah, of course.
So let's see if we I'm grilled in half a year's time, but I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, we'll wish you the best of luck on your future journey, and
yes,
I'm sure that you'll reach whatever goal you set.
Thank you so much,
and thank you so much for joining us today. It has really been a pleasure.
It was a real pleasure and honor to have you for our first episode.
And thank you so much for supporting the environment of startups in Copenhagen.
Of course. Thank you.
Great.
This podcast was brought to you by Funded by Plus Impact. We really hope you found our conversation with Jess Fleischer, CEO of Son of a Tailor, insightful. If you haven't already, go check out sonofatailor.com to explore more of their super cool products.
Yes, and if you are a Nordic Impact founder yourself and could use some support in your funding journey, we invite you to join Plus Impact today at plusimpact.io.